We're doing Bekavot with Rabbeinu Yonah. We're up to the second chapter, the seventh Mishnah. Hillel is talking here. Hu haya omer. He used to say, Marbe vasar, marbe rima. He who has more flesh will have more vermin. Marbe nechasim, marbe daga. He who has more assets will have more worry. Marbe nashim, marbech shafim. He who has more women will have more sorcery, and we'll see what that means. Marbe shefachot, marbe zima. He who has more maids will have more promiscuity. Marbe avadim, marbe gazel. He who has more servants will have more theft. Marbe torah, marbe chayim. He who has more Torah, though, he will have more life. Marbe chokhmah, marbe yeshiva. He who has more wisdom will have more serene time, more time that he sits with tranquility. Marbe etzah, marbe tevunah. He who has more advice will have more understanding. Marbe tzedakah, marbe shalom. He who gives more charity will have more peace. Kana shem tov, kana lo divrei, kana le'atzmo. If a person acquired a good name, he acquired something that's his own. Kana lo divrei Torah, kana lo chayei olam haba. He who acquires the words of Torah also acquires a portion in the world to come. So that's Hillel's matching up. The Mishnah keeps matching up pairs. Now let's see the Rabbeinu Yonah's interpretation of the Mishnah. Hu haya omer. He used to say, marbe vasar, marbe rima. He who has more flesh will have more vermin. Adam choshev kalidei ta'anug va'idun chayim, yosif. Ki ani gatzmo al pi ha'teva. Person thinks that the more pleasure, the more he pampers himself, so then he will add life to himself, because he thinks he's going in conjunction with nature. Ve'en shilton biyom ha'mavet. But in fact, when death comes, no one can overpower death. All that flesh, a person thinks, I'll be healthier, I'll eat more healthy. In their days, they thought that to be corpulent was to be healthy. So that's why the Mishnah addresses that and says, all that fat won't help. It'll be a source of shame. It'll be food for the vermin. So all that, thank you. All that. We'll talk to you. So the more flesh a person has, ultimately gets translated into vermin in the grave. Marbe nechasim, marbe de'aga. Al yachshov ki al kevod oshrov rov nechasav yevalei yamav betov v'shnotav benimim. A person shouldn't think that because he's very wealthy and he has many assets, that means he will spend life in pleasantry, things will go smoothly and calmly. It's the exact opposite. Person spends the whole year worried about it. People think they own real estate, things will go well. Well, you know, the average is 1 in 4 tenants doesn't pay rent. The average is 1 in 4 tenants you end up with in court with. 1 in 4. So you hope it's the fourth, right? Not the first. But that's a heavy statistic. That means 1 in 4 tenants is a massive headache. You're never sure if you'll win in then. So that doesn't mean you don't need assets. It just means you have to have perspective. Marbe nechasim, you have many assets. Marbe daga. Sha'al oto v'yagedcha ashirecha v'yomru lach. I'm not sure what he means to say. Just a second. Okay. It's a play on words. The verse says, "Shal bincha v'gidecha," or "Shal avicha v'yagedcha zekenecha v'yom hulach." Shal avicha v'yagedcha zekenecha v'yom hulach. So Rabbeinu Yonah made a play on words of that pasuk. He says, assets means more worries. Instead of shal avicha, he says, shal oto v'yagedcha. If you ask a wealthy person, he'll tell you, he'll admit. If you ask the wealthy people you know, they'll also tell you that their assets are really a source of worry. At night they have to think about it, by day they have to think about it. There's a lot of investment you have to make, emotional and time, and in the assets you own. Marbe avadim, marbe gazel. Yeah, if a person has many servants, he has a lot of thievery. Marbe shvachot, marbe zima. If he has a lot of maids, he'll have a lot of promiscuity. Marbe nashim, marbe chshafim. Many women, so many sorcerers. What does that mean? A lot of sorcery. V'chigzelu avadim mulukalim. Now, firstly, when a person has a lot of servants, so servants, they don't care, they got nothing to lose, he doesn't own anything. So he's going to do things that are harmful to the neighbor, he's going to take things that belong to other people, and ultimately the owner is going to have to pay for it. Because it's really the master, the owner's responsibility to ensure they don't do that. And even if a person says, I didn't know my servant was doing that, ultimately, he's held responsible. They are his assets. And when his maids are promiscuous with other people, ultimately, it's his bad reputation. In his house, people are talking about the promiscuity that's going on. Now, this is a very interesting pshat there, Ben Yonah says. When a person has many women, so he will look for all kinds of aphrodisiacs. The women and the men, they'll all look for potents that will arouse their love, their intimacy. Yes?
Why aren't you focusing on all the bad things about all these?
Correct. That's exactly Hillel's point. Hillel is coming to point out where each of these has a price. Obviously, they have a benefit. He says, we tend to think about the benefit. We tend to ignore the cost. So Hillel is coming to point out the side that people don't think about. Everyone wants servants. Everyone wants maids. Everyone wants women. Everyone wants money. Everyone wants assets. Hillel comes along and says, wait, you got to see the other side of it. So that, obviously Hillel is only pointing out one side of it. The question is he exaggerating? I think Hillel's point is that he's not exaggerating. That we're so focused on the other side of it that we forget this side of it. And that's almost every person I know has been conned. Meaning one person was conned into investing in Forex. Another guy was invested in startups. I don't know of anyone who's honest with you who hasn't been conned at least once in their life. Now, why is it that every person can be conned? The reason is because everyone looks at one side of the coin and not the other. Just this week, I met with someone who got an inheritance, wanted to invest it, and lost the whole inheritance. Now this happens often because he invested in a startup. And now I said to him, I said, you know, you're better off than many other people because other people take out loans when they're conned or they sign on to businesses which end up in debt. If you're at zero, you're better off than many other people. Now, why do people get conned? Why is it that you can, that you know, there was a book called There's One Born Every Minute. The reason is because we like to look at one side of the coin. Every person that entered a business, opened a restaurant, opened it with a certain dream. Now, if you look at the statistic, every business fails eventually. It's just a question of when. So you could say, yeah, but in the interim, people made a lot of money. Right? I'm not contesting that. But how many of the new businesses fail? How many restaurants open up in New York every year? And how many of them fail? Okay, so that's how we placate ourselves. But one of the keys is to look at the downside. A very, very wealthy businessman once said, actually he's an investment banker, he said, every time you enter a deal, you know the logic of why you entered. Yeah, you have many reasons of why you think it'll be profitable. What you have to force yourself to look at is how easy is your out. Because we tend to overlook the negative, the downside. So you always have to ask yourself, how easy is my out? I'm not interested in the out. If I were interested in the out, then I wouldn't go into it altogether. Right, but be realistic. So that's where Hillel comes in our Mishnah and says, wait, people want to be healthy, people want to be corpulent, they want to have as much steak and meat as they'd like, they want to have assets, they want women. Comes Hillel and says, look at the downside of each of these. Yes?
We were reading before in the Chofetz Chaim, Siddhav HaTesen, he went off on a tangent, quite a bit about the meme. There's a footnote that was recommending that one fast seriously, and the Ralph even recommended, building up money and investing in property or something and then having dripping, but this seems to be somewhat contrary to that advice.
So in all the Mishnayot, we have to look closely. Here he said, Marbe. He didn't say you shouldn't have assets. He didn't say you shouldn't have a wife. He didn't say you shouldn't have food. He said, Marbe. If one tries to have much of any of these, there's a balanced amount. A person has to have a certain amount of assets. It's one of the mistakes chutznikim make when they make aliyah. Here in Israel, it's a given. You get married, you buy a house. Whether you can afford 20% of the mortgage or 50% of the mortgage, you'll make that work. But you buy a house. And people come from Chutzarts and they don't buy a house. And they spend years renting and then they can't afford it. But then they have to marry off their own kids. That's the mistake that people make when they come from Chutzarts. One of the big mistakes. The way the economy works here, people buy. Doesn't matter if you can't buy in Kiryat Moshe, so you buy somewhere else, but you buy. The key is you buy. And then over time, hopefully the asset brings in a certain amount and it matures, the value matures. Okay, when Hillel said, Marbevasar, he who has too much, he who pursues flesh, he pursues putting on weight. Marbenechasim, a person who pursues having too much assets, he should realize he's really pursuing worries. Chazal obviously advised that a person divide his money, a third in real estate, a third in business, a third liquid. Yes, of course a person has to deal responsibly. The question is, when do you cross the line? When is it marbe?
Does this go with eating as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gam ki birvot nashim gorem lehem shiasuk shafim narbot ba'ava. When a person has too many women, so then they're focused on how to get him to love them, and they're focused on what potence they can give him, so he'll be so focused and excited over them. Vashnuat aseh pishnaim. And specifically the woman who he's less interested in will work doubly hard filling his soup with all kinds of potions. Atateli bovichi asata gam tzarata gam kas, till she can sway his heart, and then the competition's on. So you have two wives, each one's competing for your heart. You have four wives, you have more competition. Ultimately, it's his responsibility. The Torah forbids sorcery, and here he's encompassing many things in the sorcery. It's very interesting that the books on magic from England, and not only from England, many of the books on alternative medicine are busy with this question, and not only the secular books, the Jewish books as well. Meaning I have books at home on... I have books at home on Jewish alternative medicine, which is another way of, there are all kinds of herbs and all kinds of amulets, all kinds of what they call in Hebrew segulot. So that's my hidden library. I have a library on that too. but that's over there also. It's very interesting to see that... a large amount is dedicated to this question. If your husband doesn't love you, what can you do to arouse his love for you? This is a main point in the British and other secular alternative medicine and sorcery books, and also in the Jewish amulet books. So that's what the Mishnah is worrying.
When it talks about sorcery,
yeah,
in other places in the Torah, is it talking about this, how women trying to persuade men, or is it talking about...
It's a good question. When it crosses the line into sorcery, meaning when do you call it alternative medicine, and when do you call it sorcery? So we learned last week, as part of our Chazanish class, last week we learned the Gemara that discerned between using forces from the dead, using all kinds of spirits.
Is there really that fine of a line between using a plant to clear up your nose and calling on the dead?
Why not? So we had learned in Nachmanides that Nachmanides had drawn the line between when you use science and you're just tapping into a force, that's one thing. And when you attribute the force of will to help you, like talking to a spirit, that's when it becomes paganism. That's how Nachmanides had drawn the line. But I'm really glossing over a very broad topic. That's a short answer for a broad topic. Yes?
Sure, it's important. I think it's important here. There's a fine line. We, which is a stretch, but we all here are believers. I think that there is a concept of sorcery that people knew or did. We have it right up. So there's a fine line we're talking between alternative medicine, you know, sorcery, and out and out superstition.
Right. It's a very tough question where you draw that line, because when you have Avogadro's principle, right? Avogadro came up with a number where he said when you dilute something beyond that number, there's no molecular representation for that chemical. Avogadro's principle. Now, when you use homeopathic medicine, so then many of the active ingredients are way beyond Avogadro's principle. So what are you doing? I'm saying technically, scientifically, there's no longer a representation of that component. Now, I grew up on homeopathic medicine and it works. I can tell you as one who would take these little balls and it would be cleared up. I'd be congested. I took it, I'd be cleared up. I can tell you numerous times that we used it and it did work.
Even mainstream today acknowledged that there's a place for it, which is a huge step. They're still way behind.
I don't know how it works. I don't understand it, and I don't understand. I don't know where we draw that line. When you cross the line from alternative medicine to superstition,
and sorcerers and out and out con men.
Right. It's a tough line. Right. Right. Yes.
I'm not sure. Now I can understand the medieval thinker who sees, you know, the Jewish, you know, merchants bringing in herbs and stuff like that from medicine, from the Arab world, seeing that as sorcery because they believe in potions and all these strange elixirs and whatnot. But why would we consider this to be sorcery now when it's just herbs and other things that people are using for medicine as opposed to a chemical created in a lab?
I think the question is there scientific basis for this to work? Has this been a proven medicine? Or is it that you're tapping into a force you believe in that plant? Or, as is the case with homeopathic medicine, they believe that different elements have different forces.
Well, the difference I would just say is just simply that the government agencies out there who regulate drugs, because things are plants, don't bother getting into it, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to get those things which are considered unsafe and create a dosage where it can be safe to use, where the plants don't have to worry really as much about that.
Okay.
That's why they're not doing these research. I think that if they did the research, it would be verified by science, right?
No, because the chemical companies, the pharmaceutical companies are interested in making money. Yeah. So they're trying. If there would be a real cure for all the things they claim they have cures for, like the common cold. You ask a doctor, he tells you it's viral, we have no cure for it. And you take homeopathic medicine, it seems to work. Now,
do you still have any of that stuff, by the way? I mean, that'd be
no.
Beneficial for most of us, because whatever this little ball is you took, man, I can really use that.
There are a lot of homeopathic doctors in the neighborhood, but I don't know about all this.
The insurance covers them?
No.